and welcome to Volume 46, Number 12 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday, the 20th of March, 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Andy and Margaret. And in the news this week, asbestos at the Cantley sugar plant is blamed for a councillor's death. More arguments over potholes. And details for this year's Easter Fair. Well, circumstances have dictated no news in brief or indeed Grapevine Extra this week, but we do have some birthdays. So it's many happy returns this week to Clifford Gray for Tuesday the 24th, followed by Grapevine listener and committee member David Wilkinson, celebrating on Friday the 27th. Best wishes to you both. Okay, it's time for the first part of the news, so over to Margaret and Andy.
Hello, and we have this week's news, and it's Margaret and Andy, and Margaret's going to start.
Hello, everybody, and I'm sitting here looking out of the window in the studio at the brilliant sunshine. How lovely to know that spring is on the way. Anyway, if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin with the first part of the news. A Norfolk police officer has been accused of using a sex worker. The officer, who has not been named, is now facing disciplinary action which could result in his sacking. He is said to have availed himself of the services of a sex worker while off duty. At a misconduct hearing later this month, a disciplinary panel will decide whether to uphold the allegations against him and, if so, what punishment he will face. Ahead of the hearing, the officer had asked for his name not to be made public, a request which the panel chairman has accepted. It means no details about his role in the force or where in the county he is based have been revealed. Instead, he is identified only as Officer Y. The interim decision granting him anonymity may last throughout the hearing itself. The officer has already been investigated by Norfolk Constabulary's Professional Standards Department, which ruled that he could face a full hearing set to take place at the force's Wyndham headquarters on March the 26th. The allegations against him are that he used a sex worker on three occasions, between December 2024 and February 2025. In doing so, he is said to have failed to follow the National Police Chiefs Council Work National Guidance, which specified that the use of sex workers is incompatible with the role of a police officer. It is claimed he also failed to comply with the force's disclosable association policy, which requires serving officers to declare non-work relationships with a range of groups, including persons who work in the sex industry. The disciplinary panel will determine whether it amounts to discreditable conduct. The officer could face sanctions ranging from a written warning to dismissal without notice if the allegations are found proved.
A former Great Yarmouth mayor and councillor died after being exposed to asbestos during his time working as a seasonal employee at a Norfolk factory. Malcolm Bird died on February the 23rd after being diagnosed with mesothelioma 2 years prior. The 77-year-old had worked at the British Sugar Factory in Cantley, where he was employed during peak times through the 1980s. It is believed he was exposed to asbestos while cleaning the pipes and working on the factory floor. An inquest at Norfolk Coroner's Court on Wednesday, March 18th, heard how his health deteriorated after his diagnosis. He had persistent symptoms, including significant breathing difficulties, and was admitted to palliative care. His son, Chris Bird, said the illness took a hold of him within weeks and punished him to the point where he died unpleasantly. Chris added that his father had been a fit, active and well man up until that point, and their family felt they had been denied many more years with him. The court heard that Mr. Bird lived on Euston Road in Yarmouth and was a retired hotelier at the time of his death. He was first elected to represent Great Yarmouth Central and Northgate Ward in 2014 as a UKIP councillor. Mr. Bird became the mayor of the town in 2016, making him the first and only UKIP councillor to hold that position. A year later, he crossed the floor to join the Conservative Party and was re-elected to the council in 2018 when he stood for the Caister South Ward. He served on a string of committees at the council, including Housing and Neighbourhoods, Economic Development and the Environment Committee. Mr. Bird died at home, with his cause of death listed as mesothelioma of the left pleural. Assistant Coroner Robin Whale concluded that Mr. Bird's death was a result of industrial disease. Mr. Whale expressed condolences to his family and friends, as well as recognition for his years of public service. In a statement, Chris described his father as a strong and generous family member who was fantastic with his grandkids and wonderful with his nieces and nephews. Not only do we miss him incredibly, but we all feel the loss of him not being able to offer his advice or support, he added. We, as a family, feel embittered by having him taken away from us so soon.
A new bar and grill restaurant is set to open in Galston after months of work behind the scenes. Tipsy Grill is planning to open its new bar and grill restaurant on Galston High Street at the beginning of April. Its owners are excited to bring something different to the town's food and drink scene. Kiri Mardivan, joint owner of Tipsy Grill, said, "I always felt we have these bars in London, and it's more of a restaurant for family gatherings. We went for this bar kind of idea, thought we would try this and give back to the locals. We want it to be a family-orientated place with nice music for people to come and chill." The restaurant plans to serve grilled chicken, pizza, pasta and smash burgers. It will also serve some Sri Lankan starters, including fish cutlet and steak rolls, to honour the two owners' Sri Lankan heritage. Its bar will serve cocktails and offer a variety of beers. Mr. Mardivan added, "We have a fully equipped kitchen and gone for a nice modern look with a full bar and high-end drinks. We're going to do chef's special days and might have a Sri Lankan day and Jamaican day for different types of food." Its owners acquired the premises at 138 C High Street in Galston, located next to the Iceland supermarket, in August 2024, and they've been working on bringing new flavours to the town ever since. They initially applied for planning permission to create a new food court-style operation, but were refused. Afterwards, they reshaped their plans and got planning approval for its bar and grill restaurant. It's waiting for planning approval to install an extractor fan prior to opening and also intends to offer takeaways at the restaurant later down the line. The restaurant will announce its official opening day on its Facebook page when everything is in place.
A barber whose mobile business has proved so popular he's booked up 4 weeks in advance has opened his first permanent shop in Martham Village. Brad Pruden, as 29, has launched Brad's Barber Shop on the Green in the Village. The new barber's has three chairs and follows the success of his Brad's Mobile Barber's venture, which he's run for 3 years since moving from Norwich to Caister. Mr. Pruden said demand from his existing customers pushed him to put down roots with the bricks and mortar location. "I'm booked out for the next 4 weeks," he said. "It's been rammed since it opened." He's been a barber for 12 years and plans to keep the mobile side of the business running alongside the shop so he can continue serving regulars who rely on home visits. The opening came just days before Mr. Pruden was assaulted near the premises on Friday, March the 13th. The incident has also left his branded van damaged. In a post to customers, Mr. Pruden said the barber shot itself was not targeted and that the matter was now with police. He wrote, "The matter is in the hands of the police and being dealt with accordingly, so we won't be commenting further while it's investigated. The shop wasn't targeted. It was me, myself. I can assure it's a safe place. The van is damaged, but it will live to see another day." Despite the setback, Mr. Pruden said the doors at Brad's barbershop remain open as normal. The barber's is currently opening as late as 10 p.m. on some days to keep up with demand. He added, "Thanks to everyone for the continued support. And apologies again to the community for what was embarrassing, to say the least, being 5 days into opening." Norfolk police were called to the Green in Martham at 10:57 a.m. on Friday, March 13th, to report a van window had been smashed and a man had been assaulted by another man with a metal pole. Subsequently, Ashley Parsons, aged 43, of the street in Acle, has been charged with criminal damage, assault and a Section 4 public order offence and possession of an offensive weapon. He will appear at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on April the 8th.
A car park operator with sites across Norfolk has fallen into administration. National Car Parks, NCP, which manages two car parks in Norwich and King's Lynn, appointed administrators at PwC after struggling to fill spaces since COVID-19 and grappling with losses. The 95-year-old company operates the St Stephen's multi-storey in Queen's Road, as well as the car park at Norwich Railway Station. It also has sites at Old Market and Church Street in King's Lynn and at train stations including Diss, Attleborough and Great Yarmouth. All sites will remain open as usual and staff will stay in their jobs while administrators consider the options for the business.
Well, we've heard of City of Culture around the UK and now we have Town of Culture. Momentum is building behind Great Yarmouth's bid, as reported last week, to be named the first ever UK Town of Culture. Community groups and arts organisations are rallying around Great Yarmouth Borough Council as the town bids to be named the UK's Town of Culture in 2028. The winner of the inaugural competition will receive a £3 million prize. Carl Smith, leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, "2028 is a key year for Great Yarmouth. The beautifully restored Venetian waterways will turn 100. The Hippodrome, 125. The Out There Festival will celebrate its 20th year. And, of course, the Winter Gardens are set to reopen. We host the UK's last remaining purpose-built circus building, and the town is recognised national capital for circus and outdoor arts. Our medieval rose, town wall and seafront heritage buildings sit alongside the neon thrill of the Golden Mile. Town of Culture status would reflect our unique offer." The town said its concept for the bid will build on three themes, reflecting Great Yarmouth's character and future opportunities. It wants to celebrate the town's people, stories and seaside identity and showcase its cultural heritage assets. The government announced the creation of the first ever UK Town of Culture competition in January. Interested towns have until the end of March to submit their expressions of interest. The strongest towns will progress to a shortlist, where each shortlisted town will receive £60,000 to help deliver their full bids for the competition. The panel will then select the best small, medium and large towns from the full applications received. One of these will be named the UK Town of Culture 2028 and receive £3 million, with the other two finalists each receiving £250,000. Great Yarmouth is likely to face stiff competition from across the country and would have to fight off a bid from Lowestoft and a joint bid from Cromer and Sheringham if they're going to lift the crown.
The family favourite fun fair with rides and attractions is returning to Great Yarmouth this spring. From April the 9th to the 12th, the marketplace will be taken over by the event, which has been running for more than 100 years and sees Great Yarmouth Borough Council work in partnership with the Eastern Counties branch of the Showman's Guild. Expect thrilling rides, colourful lights, traditional games and delicious treats. The perfect way for a fun day out with family and friends, a spokesman for Great Yarmouth Borough Council said. There's something for everyone to enjoy. The fair will be open until late at night for each day of the event and road closures will be in place on the Conge, the Marketplace and Church Plain from midday on April the 8th. As in previous years, the two-day market will be cancelled while the fair is in town, and Great Yarmouth Borough Council is providing traffic control and medical cover for the duration of the event. And as we know, Great Yarmouth citizens, the weather will always turn cold, so be warned. Tradition. We usually get snow. Well, not really, but it always turns cold.
It'll just feel like it, will it?
Yes.
Can't beat the East Coast.
No, that's true.
Anyway, talking of the coast, communities across Norfolk and Waveney will get a slice of £56 million government investment in flood defences. But despite the funding boost, there's disappointment that one erosion-threatened village has missed out. The funding, announced by the Environment Agency, will pay for flood defence schemes across the region in 2026 and 27, amid the growing threat of flooding and coastal erosion. Among the places that will benefit from the investment are Beccles, Beneker, and Kessingland, Dereham, Eastern Broad, Great Yarmouth, Haddiscoe, Haysborough to Winterton, Hockwood, Magdalen Fen, the River Bure and the Upper Thurn. The schemes will begin installation in spring, with completion expected by summer this year. There is some disappointment, however, that Hemsby is not included in the plans, with the village having suffered unprecedented rates of coastal erosion. It has lost more than 10 metres of land in the last year and seen more than 36 properties demolished since 2013. Councillor James Bensley, who represents the East Flegg ward on Great Yarmouth Borough Council and serves as the area's county councillor, said, "I'm disappointed, angry, upset and, to be honest, confused by the whole fact that Hemsby doesn't get any funding. We're all still suffering at this time in the shadow of erosion. So when will we get help from central government?" He said the latest round of flood defence funding was another example of how Hemsby has been let down by the formula and mechanisms in place for coastal communities that need serious attention for all of our coastal communities here in Norfolk. However, in late January this year, the government separately announced £18 million for coastal adaptation plots, specifically targeting Norfolk, Suffolk and East Riding of Norfolk. The money will fund pilot schemes, including selective property purchases and new financing solutions in areas where homes face imminent risks from erosion. Local leaders in Hemsby hope that some of those funds will help villagers adapt to the rapidly advancing coastline.
A man has won a holiday worth thousands of pounds following a competition at a gym. Local chain NR Health and Fitness Club hosted a prize draw for the holiday involving gym members. Since January, new members were automatically enrolled in a draw, as well as any member who referred a friend being entered twice. "We had well over 2,000 entries from across all of our sites," owner Nathan Gosling remarked. The aptly named Sunny Hall, who attends the newly purchased Old Hall facility in Caister, landed the top prize, which consisted of £2,500 worth of holiday vouchers for a location of his choice. It's great for us, with Old Hall being one of our newest clubs, and it's great to have Old Hall in the mix now, Mr. Gosling continued. To be able to do these things and be able to give back to the community, it's great doing these things that other businesses do not do.
Firms in East Anglia will be paid grants to hire more young people than apprentices under new government plans to tackle the youth unemployment crisis. Businesses will receive £3,000 for every person between the ages of 18 and 24 they employ who has been on benefits and searching for a job for more than 6 months. Meanwhile, small and medium firms will be paid £2,000 for every new apprentice they take on. The government hopes the Youth Jobs Grant will support around 60,000 young people into jobs over the next 3 years. It comes as the number of NEETs, young people not in education, employment or training, rose to almost 1 million last year, representing 1 in 8 people aged 16 to 24. Critics say the grants will only paper over the cracks after the government's £25 billion national insurance tax raid on businesses and increases to the minimum wage last year. Employers do not have to pay the national insurance on the salaries of employees under 21 unless they earn more than £50,270. Firms have also warned that new rules giving greater protection to workers, coupled with further increases to the minimum wage next month, will put a handbrake on job creation and recruitment because of the added costs associated with hiring new staff. Government economists have estimated that the Employment Rights Act will cost businesses £1 billion a year once fully implemented over the next 2 years. UK unemployment hit a five-year high at the end of last year, climbing to 5.2%. Meanwhile, the rate of youth unemployment reached 16.1%, the highest level since 2014, and above the average level in the European Union, which stands at 14.9%, for the first time since data was available in 2000, according to the Resolution Foundation. Around 1,000 extra engineering construction workers will be needed in the East by the end of the decade to build major infrastructure projects such as Sizewell C and new offshore wind farms, according to the chief executive of the industry's training body. Andrew Hockey, CEO of the Engineering Construction Industry Training Board, ECITB, has said that the sector desperately needs new talent and the region's workforce forecasted to increase by 12% in the next 5 years.
It is one of the most photographed mills on the Norfolk Broads, and now work has started to save it for future generations. Norfolk County Council has begun restoration work on Turf Fen Mill, a 31-foot tall, Grade 2 listed Victorian drainage mill set by the River Ant on the Howe Hill estate. The £450,000 project will see careful dismantling of key components of the building, including the cap, stocks and fantail, so they can be repaired and reinstalled later this year. One of three mills on the Howe Hill estate, south of Irstead, the mill was built in the 1860s by millwright William Rust to drain surrounding marshland into the Ant, so fields could be used for livestock. The mill fell out of use in the 1920s. The mill was previously restored between 1984 and 1987 when steel stocks were added, and the mill was returned to turning conditions. But its condition has since declined and was added to Historic England's Heritage at Risk Register in 2023. A year later, Historic England announced a £242 £1,870 grant for Norfolk County Council to help restore it. Kay Mason Billig, leader of Conservative-run County Hall, said, "Turf Fen Mill is a treasured part of Norfolk's landscape, and its restoration represents a shared commitment to protecting the heritage that defines the Broads. This project brings together expert partners and vital funding to ensure the mill can be enjoyed by future generations. The County Council is doing the work in partnership with Norfolk Windmills Trust and the Broads Authority, with funding from Historic England, Norfolk Windmills Trust, the Pilgrim Trust and the Geoffrey Watling Charity. The project is expected to be completed by the end of 2026.
A gripping new stage production, Crossing the Line, will debut at venues across the east of England, starting at St George's Theatre in Great Yarmouth on Monday, May the 11th. The play explores the dangers of county lines exploitation through the story of Eric, a teenager who becomes drawn into a dangerous criminal network following the death of his father. Adapted from T.F. Fisher's award-winning verse novel of the same name, the production has been developed with input from young people aged 11 to 18 to ensure it feels authentic and relevant. Katie Thompson, director of the production, said, "The young people we're working with are incredibly open and honest when sharing their insights. They're passionate about telling Eric's story and how theatre can help to spotlight the issues affecting their lives. Their contributions will help us create a production that feels real, contemporary and relevant." Following its premiere in Great Yarmouth, Crossing the Line will be performed at venues including the New Wolseley Theatre in Ipswich, Sheringham Little Theatre, The Seagull in Lowestoft, The Cornhall in Diss and Norwich Playhouse. Debbie Thompson, producer at St George's Theatre, said, "We're really excited to be bringing a full production of T.F. Fisher's novel to the stage at St George's and to venues across the region. Many of the young people and partners that we work with have seen firsthand how county lines can impact lives. This production will not only represent their experiences on stage, but will highlight the issues for a wider range of theatre audiences. More information and tickets are available on the theatre's websites."
We've all heard of a storm in a teacup, but at Hemsby Beach it turned out to be a storm in a kettle. Police were called to Hemsby at 11:30 a.m. on Monday after reports that an unexploded Second World War bomb had been discovered in the sand. Officers attended and contacted the Explosive Ordnance Disposal Team, but the drama quickly fizzled out when the suspicious object was identified as a brass kettle. Norfolk Police spokesperson said the item was confirmed as non-hazardous and officers were stood down.
A machete-wielding man who circled another boater on the Norfolk Broads has sailed free due to a lack of evidence. The usually still waters of the Broads became rather choppy at about 9:45 a.m. on March 3rd in Barton Turf. The man, who was in possession of a machete, was seen intimidatingly orbiting another person on the water. At least three police cars and a forensic van were called to Staithe Road to investigate the incident, but the knife man had already sailed off by the time they arrived, sparking a police investigation. It has since emerged that no further action will be taken in the investigation. "It did not fulfil the evidence threshold needed for prosecution," a police spokesman said, "and no one was injured in the incident."
"I dreamed last night I got on the boat to heaven, and by some chance I had brought my dice along. And there I stood, and I hollered, 'Someone fade me!' But the passengers, they knew right from wrong. for the people all said, sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat. People all said, sit down, you're rocking the boat. And the devil will drag you under for the sharp lapel of your checkered coat. Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat. I sailed away on that little boat to heaven, and by some chance found a bottle in my fist, and there I stood nicely passing out the whiskey, but the passengers were bound to resist. For the people all said, beware, you're on a heavenly trip.
Beware.
People all said, beware,
beware,
beware, you'll scuttle a ship. And the devil will drag you under for the fancy tie round your wicked throat. Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat. And as I laughed at those passengers to heaven, a great big wave came and washed me overboard. And as I sank and I hollered, someone save me, that's the moment I woke up. Thank the Lord. And I said to myself, sit down, you're rocking the boat. I said to myself, sit down, you're rocking the boat. And the devil will drag you under with a soul so heavy you'd never float. Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat. Sit down, you're rocking, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat. Sit down, you're rocking, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat. Sit down, you're
rocking. Well, a bit of boat rocking going on, but purely in song from Stubby K. The rest of the local news in the shake of a spring lamb's tail. But first, a couple of events from Vision Norfolk. First off, it's accessible tennis. Yes, tennis sessions with a coach and using sound jingle balls are available. So you can jingle all the way, I assume. Well, someone had to say it. And the tennis rackets are provided. The events are at Eastern Tennis Centre, Eastern College, Barbara Road, Eastern, Norwich, NR95DU, and are on Mondays from 10:30 until 11:30. On the following dates, the 20th of April, the 18th of May, the 1st of June, 15th of June, 6th of July and the 20th of July. A minibus will leave at 10 a.m. from the Vision Norfolk Bradbury Activity Centre, Beckham Place, Norwich, and return by approximately 12 noon. Booking is essential, and please call Helen or Mark on 01603 573 000 extension 341 or 342 or email mark.smith@visionnorfolk.org.uk. Sessions are free of charge and all equipment is supplied. Next, news of the allotment and greenhouse project. This is on Wednesday the 8th of April from 10:30 until 12:30. Come along and join our adults, children and young people for a hands-on gardening workshop where we'll be planting seeds, preparing soil and learning about how to grow for our joint allotment project. This is a great opportunity to see our new greenhouse and get involved, learn new skills and enjoy the outdoors, getting ready for the summer where we will harvest what we've grown. This is being held at the Bradbury Activity Centre, Edward Street, Beckham Place, NR33DZ. Please book your place by Monday the 30th of March with Helen or Mark on the usual number 01603 573 000 extension 341 or 342, or email, as usual, mark.smith@visionnorfolk, all one word, .org.uk. OK, it's time now to get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news. So it's back to Margaret and Andy.
Norfolk Constabulary is facing questions after it emerged a single officer had received £30,000 in overtime payments last year, with the force's total overtime bill topping £5.7 million. The officer who has not been identified was one of 25 who were all paid more than £17,600 for working extra hours on top of their salaries. Almost 9 out of 10 officers on the force received overtime payments, with an average of almost £3,000 going to each one. The figures have raised alarm, with critics saying extra hours are draining budgets, with crimes going unsolved and victims unheard. Darwin Friend, head of research at the Taxpayers Alliance, said, "Taxpayers across Norfolk will be deeply concerned by these extraordinary overtime costs. With police budgets already stretched, spending millions of pounds on overtime payments is simply unsustainable. Norfolk Police need to ensure every penny of taxpayers' money is spent protecting the public and catching criminals." In total, the force made £5,012,402 in overtime payments to 1,714 officers, about 9 out of 10 of the total number, and £782,350 to 603 police staff. Of the 25 overtime earners, 23 were male and 2 were female. The force say the spending is because of the hundreds of additional working hours clocked up by policing large-scale weekly protests and counter-protests that began last summer over the brick hotel in Beauthorpe being used to house migrants. Similar protests were also staged at the Park Hotel in Diss and in Great Yarmouth, adding to the overtime bill. A Norfolk Constabulary spokeswoman said, "We recognise this is a significant overtime cost, and much of this was driven by the demands of policing a significant increase in the number of protests last summer. Overtime is often required to police protests or large events. Otherwise, staff would have to be removed from core policing duties, which would diminish our ability to respond to emergency calls or undertake neighbourhood policing. Police regulations require that when rest days are cancelled at short notice, which is often the case when we are notified of protests at short notice, officers are compensated, and these national rules apply to all forces. At the height of the protests last summer, Norfolk Chief Constable Paul Sanford called for extra resources from the government, saying he could not crack down on crime if I've got dozens of police officers stood outside a hotel. Other demands on manpower also came from policing protests about the Gaza conflict and demonstrations on issues ranging from the Norwich Western Link Road to animal rights and transgender rights. Police have said overtime can be the most cost-effective means of dealing with demands outside of day-to-day policing. Overtime is paid to the usual hour rate between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday to Friday, and time and a half between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. Extra hours worked on Saturdays and Sundays are paid at time and a half, but on public holidays it is double time. A spokeswoman said policing protests included the need to use specialist public order trained officers and neighbourhood policing resources, with support from other forces providing mutual aid. "We monitor overtime closely and will claim back eligible costs from the government where possible. While mindful of public spending, our priorities is ensuring we have the right resources in place to protect the public," she added. The Norfolk Police Federation, which represents rank and file officers, did not respond to requests for a comment.
Bosses at Norfolk County Council have defended their record on potholes after a national report branded the state of roads in England and Wales as a national disgrace. The annual report by the Asphalt Industry Alliance, published on Tuesday, found it would cost £18.6 billion to bring roads up to scratch, with the Norfolk backlog estimated at 71.4 million. But the Conservative-run County Hall defended the state of its roads, saying Norfolk has the lowest number of potholes out of 40 surrounding counties. A spokesman said, "Norfolk has 6,200 miles, and we deal with typically 8,000 potholes per year. While that might sound a lot, there are other authorities out there with much less than half the mileage dealing with around 50,000 potholes per year. Our figures show a rate of about 1.3 potholes per mile of road. The 10 authorities with the highest number are dealing with between 13 and 22 potholes per mile." The spokesman said so far this financial year, the authority has fixed 6,515 potholes. He said the county also consistently ranks among the top performing authorities in the National Highways and Transport Survey, with its 48% satisfaction score exceeding the 40% national average. The council is not responsible for the A11 or A47, which are maintained by National Highways. Graham Plant, the council's cabinet member for Highways, Transport and Infrastructure, was recently challenged on the council's record by Liberal Democrat County Councillor Rob Cowell, as the number of potholes being fixed had fallen. Mr. Plant said, "Potholes are caused by a number of different factors. However, the main factor is weather conditions, which impact significantly on the highway surface, specifically the freeze-thaw action during the winter period." Mr. Plant said the council spent more on highway maintenance than reactive pothole fixing to stop potholes forming in the first place. People can report potholes at www.norfolk.gov.uk/potholes.
A former pub has been sold at auction after being out of action for 6 years. The Albert Tavern in South Gates Road, Great Yarmouth, was sold last month after being closed since 2020. In 2022, the property was up for auction with a guide price of £350,000. And at the time, it was described as an excellent investment opportunity. In February of this year, the property was being marketed by Barnard Marcus, which is part of the William H. Brown Group, for less than half of the original guide price at £160,000. The building is being converted into ground floor offices, but it is unclear how far along these plans are. It also has three self-contained flats on the first floor. A spokesman for Barnard Marcus previously said potential buyers would have to make their own inquiries as to the state of the building. The property has now been sold at auction for an undisclosed amount, but the letting agent revealed the last bid made was £150,000.
And I've got another pub story. Councillors have given the green light to changes in the plans for the derelict Art Deco Iron Duke pub after the owners had to make savings due to inflation. The Development Management Committee at Great Yarmouth Borough Council has approved an application to vary existing planning permission for restoring the Iron Duke on Jellicoe Road to reflect a series of design changes. The pub, which has stood empty since 2008, is being restored as a ground floor bar and restaurant with two self-contained holiday lets above. The changes include swapping a spiral staircase for a standard staircase, dropping raised brick planters, scaling back hedging, and replacing a proposed resin-bound car park surface with tarmac. A report prepared by planners shows there was debate over how to accommodate modern ventilation equipment and new windows without harming the landmark's character. Earlier proposals to mount equipment on the roof were deemed unacceptably harmful to the listed building. The kit will now be pushed into the rear service yard and screened by a higher boundary wall, a solution officers say causes a low to moderate level of less than substantial harm. The revisions come after the Great Yarmouth Preservation Trust, which owns the building, had to make savings following a full tender process carried out under National Lottery rules. The lowest bid came in above the original cost estimates, mostly due to inflation. In a report prepared ahead of the meeting, officers say the £2.5 million project has gone over budget, and that the Preservation Trust has carried out a value engineering exercise to keep it viable. The final phase of the restoration began on March the 2nd, with the venue expected to reopen by late summer this year.
And this next item has brought joy to my fellow reader, Andy. Whoop, whoop, he said. Any comment, Andy?
Well, I know this. I can read it upside down. I know which one it is.
Right,
it's about time, and it'll be great when it properly finishes.
Right. I shall carry on then. A newly dualled section of the A47 has opened to motorists for the first time. The £100 million section of road between North Burlingham and Blowfield welcomed road users on Wednesday morning for the first time. Many early morning commuters had reported delays to the opening, with large queues heading towards both Acle and westbound to Norwich. However, after a short delay, drivers were able to make use of the new section of road. The new section lasts for 2.6 miles. While the whole scheme is still a few weeks away from completion, traffic will be switched to the new section now, while work on the existing A47 continues. Along with the dualling, the project includes safety improvements to the Yarmouth Road junction at Blowfield. A bridge is being built over the new dual carriageway to connect the villages of Blowfield and North Burlingham and take traffic from Blowfield towards Great Yarmouth. A new two-tier junction is also being made to connect the B1140 South Walsham Road north of the A47 with the B1140 Cox Hill Road south of the A47.
And hopefully it'll make life a bit easier for the sugar beet wagons and make life a bit safer for everybody. However, be great when it's finished, but isn't that the same with all roads? But getting back to normal life, a warning has been issued after reports of scammers pretending to be police officers. Police in Great Yarmouth have been told of a string of courier fraud attempts in the town and surrounding villages since Saturday. There have been 17 cases of scammers posing as police officers and asking people for their bank details. In one case, money was successfully taken by the fraudsters, but all other attempts have been unsuccessful. Unlike earlier scams, in which callers pretended to be from police stations in different parts of the country, the recent perpetrators have taken on the identity of local officers. Police are urging people to hang up and call 101, ideally on another phone, to verify an officer's identity if they are contacted by anyone claiming to be from the force. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary said, "An officer will never mind waiting for you to check their identity via the control room. Your bank or the police will never ask for your PIN, bank card or bank account details over the phone. Do not give these details to anybody."
The Original Factory shop has announced the closing date for its remaining Norfolk stores. The discount retail chain plunged into administration at the end of January, with Interpath Advisory being appointed to oversee the business. A closing down sale was launched at its branches, with discounts of between 30% and 60% off all products, including clothing, gardening and electrical. The branch at Dereham is already shut, but the closing dates of all the other local stores have now been confirmed. The closing is spread over three Saturdays, with the last shutting down on Saturday, April the 4th. Galston's shop closes on Saturday, March the 29th.
A campaign called the School Specs Recycling Project has been launched by the Great Yarmouth Lions Club. It's currently in three local schools, bringing the Spectacle Recycling Programme directly into schools. It comes after two members of the club held an assembly at Edward Wordledge Ormiston Academy, where two club members visited the school to speak to pupils. A spokesman for the club said, "We spoke to the pupils about the work Lions do, our Specs recycling project, vision screening and a ball for all. The children were fantastic and really enjoyed learning how donated glasses can help people around the world." As part of the project, travelling spectacle collection bins have now been placed in three local schools. Each school will have the opportunity to collect as many pairs of unwanted spectacles as possible before the bins move on to the next school. The aim of the project is to see which schools can collect as many pairs of unwanted spectacles as possible to help youngsters think about recycling and helping others. The club hopes to expand the programme to more schools across the area. Schools wanting to get involved can email leah.everett, that's with two T's, 8@icloud.com. I'll do that again. leah.everett8@icloud.com.
Great Yarmouth has been named among the best places in the UK for spotting the first glimpses of spring. According to research from car rental experts 6T, the town has the ideal climate for the season to bloom in full colour. Great Yarmouth offers an ideal chance of seeing the first signs of spring with a low rainfall probability at 49% and an average temperature of 10 degrees in March. Nearby Norwich was crowned the top spot, highlighting areas such as historical streets near the cathedral, River Wensum walks and cobbled lanes like Elm Hill. In March, the average sunsets take place at 6:06 p.m. and the first 7 p.m. sunset is expected at the end of the month. Searches for when do the clocks go forward have jumped 190% in the last month in the UK. Spring has already begun meteorologically, with its start date being March the 1st. But astronomical spring, which is based on the Earth's relative position to the Sun, begins on March the 20th. And the clocks go forward on March the 29th. So remember, when you go to bed on Saturday night, put your clocks forward, ready for Sunday. There you go. You've been told now.
A probe has been launched after a man who admitted sending bulk text messages to drugs users in Norfolk was stabbed before he was due to appear in court. Police have confirmed that they are investigating after Sonny Williamson was stabbed in the arm just days before he was due to be sentenced for drugs offences. The 22-year-old appeared at Norwich Crown Court on Wednesday, March the 11th, with his arm in a sling, having reported the attack, which happened on Friday, March the 6th, to police. Wilson had previously admitted being concerned in the supply of cocaine, having been stopped by police in a van in October last year. John Morgans, who represented Wilson, said the stab attack had been reported to the police by Wilson, and the person responsible was believed to be the same person who had involved him in the offending. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary said the force received a report that a man had been assaulted near Kent Square at about 9:20 p.m. on Friday, March 6th. The spokesman said the victim sustained a knife wound to his arm, which, although not life-threatening or life-changing, was treated in hospital. The spokesman added the victim had since been discharged and an investigation is underway. Martin Ivory, who prosecuted the case, said Wilson had been sending out bulk text messages advertising the sale of cocaine to drug addicts. He had been in a van stopped by police in Great Yarmouth when he was found to be in possession of a quantity of cocaine. Mr. Ivory said, as well as the drugs, some of which was found in Wilson's underwear, officers also found a mobile phone on which they found outgoing drug-dealing messages following the stop on September 16th last year. The prosecutor said Wilson had been sending out bulk messages to drug users stating he was about. The court heard Wilson had been involved in the offending for about 6 weeks. Wilson, of Charlotte Close in Caister near Yarmouth, recently appeared at court when he admitted being concerned in the supply of cocaine. Mr. Morgan said Wilson, who has ADHD and suffers from a mental health disorder linked to a significant brain injury he suffered in a crash in 2020, played a lesser role and performed a limited function under the direction of others. He said Wilson deserved credit for his plea and was vulnerable and had been exploited by others. But he said the defendant had stopped using cocaine and rebuilt his relationship with his mother, who appeared in court to support him. In imposing a 12-month prison term, suspended for 12 months, Judge Alice Robinson took into account his plea and his remorse and mental health difficulties. Judge Robinson warned him not to take it as a get-out-of-jail-free card and insisted he must take up the opportunities afforded by the imposition of 10 rehabilitation activity days attached to the suspended sentence. He was also made the subject of a 6-month trail monitoring order, meaning his movements would be tracked by a tag put on him.
A holiday park operator is bringing back a well-loved 1990s children's show. Haven has announced the return of its children's entertainment show, The Tiger Club. It will relaunch across 36 of the company's 39 holiday parks and bring back the same brand of fun that made it a family favourite. Norfolk has 4 Haven holiday parks near Great Yarmouth: Hopton, Caister-on-Sea, Seashore and Wild Duck. Simon Palethorpe, chief executive at Haven, said, "We're thrilled to announce the return of the Tiger Club across our parks. I'm sure it will be a roaring success." For many of our holidaymakers, the club evokes fond memories of happy childhood summers spent at Haven. Now, parents and grandparents can share that same magic with their children, while reliving the moments that made their own childhood holidays unforgettable. The revamped Tiger Club will deliver 30 minutes of fast-paced games, laughter and family-friendly competition before a finale with Rory the Tiger. Jenny and Rob Williams, Haven Park owners, have fond memories of the show. The Tiger Club song is the most iconic song of Haven holidays, they added.
And 2 people have been arrested following a police raid in the town. Officers targeted the building on Regent Road in Great Yarmouth on Tuesday, March the 17th, following reports of antisocial behaviour at the location. Once inside the building, they found a number of technology items believed to be stolen. 2 people were arrested on the same day on suspicion of theft and are being held at Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning.
The Village Maid in Lound will close on Sunday as the pub group Moss & Co., after a decade behind the bar, reveals it has been sold to new landlords. With heavy hearts, we announce the closing of the Village Maid on Sunday, March the 22nd, reads the announcement. After a wonderful decade of memories, laughter and community, this has not been an easy decision for us. We've chosen to focus our time and energy on our much-loved, busy core pubs, as well as our ever-growing events, where we can continue bringing people together in the best way we know how. To everyone who has walked through our doors over the years, thank you. The Village Maid will always hold a special place in our story. We also want to say a huge and heartfelt thank you to our incredible team, past and present. Your hard work, dedication and spirit are what truly made the Village Maid what it was and what it will continue to be. You've been at the heart of it all and we're so grateful for everything you've given over the years. We know the new owners are excited to meet you all and will announce their plans in the near future. The Village Maid is nestled beside the picturesque Duck Pond in the village of Lound, right on the border with Norfolk and Suffolk. Moss and Co. also runs the Broadlands and the Commodore in Alton Broad, the Angel Inn in Wangford, the Bell Inn in Carlton Colville, and the Jolly Sailors in Pakefield.
And the last news report concerns the Winter Gardens. People have been given a behind-the-scenes tour of work to rejuvenate a key attraction on the seafront. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has welcomed National Lottery players for a tour inside the Winter Gardens. The Victorian Glasshouse on Great Yarmouth's Golden Mile is currently undergoing a £19 million regeneration project and is scheduled to reopen in 2028. A Facebook post from Great Yarmouth Borough Council said, "As part of National Lottery Open Week, we were delighted to welcome National Lottery players for exclusive behind-the-scenes tours of the Winter Gardens. Visitors were given a special look at the restoration work currently taking place, offering a chance to see the progress being made to bring this iconic building back to life. From the intricate architecture to the careful conservation work happening throughout the site, it was fantastic to share the journey with those who help make projects like this possible. Contractors have been working on its restoration since September last year, when hoardings were installed around the site. In January, work inside the Grade 2 listed venue began, with work taking place on the specialist piling and substructure improvements. Designs for the Winter Gardens, the UK's last surviving Victorian glasshouse on a seaside promenade, include new glazing, heating and cooling systems, significant planting, rainwater harvesting, irrigation, low energy and decarbonisation. Located next to Wellington Pier, it's set to become a people's palace with cafes and community spaces when it reopens in 2028. After that last news item, it only remains for me to repeat something that Margaret talked about earlier. Please remember, your clocks should go forward, Sunday 29th.
I got it wrong, didn't I? I assumed it was this coming weekend, but it's not. It's March the 29th. Saturday the 28th, when you go to bed, is when you put your clocks forward. And you wake up on Sunday morning and the new time will have started.
And you'll have lost an hour.
And I read it like it was this coming weekend. Ignore me. So sorry. If I got paid to do this, I'd have been sacked a long while ago. Thank you, everybody.
And goodbye.
Well, that's just about it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your newsreaders will be Andrew and Alison. So, we look forward to your company for that. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope that you stay safe and well. So, from all your friends at Grapevine, it's bye for now.